Coming up next on This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tarr, who's usually my co-host, is today's guest. Chris has been super busy over the past few months, making changes to transmitter sites, replacing transmitters, trying to standardize the important things at his many transmitter sites, almost 50 of them now. Chris is our guest and telling us all about those stories and what he's done to improve things, and we're going to learn a lot from it. Coming up next on TWRC. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry, at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee today, my usual home spot. It's a gorgeous day here in Nashville. Oh, I wish I was outside. It's so beautiful. The sun is shining, the birds are chirping, the humidity is finally getting a bit lower after some storms that we had a couple days ago and yesterday morning. So it's starting to feel good, and I feel good. And I appreciate Telos Alliance for letting me have a little time every single week to do something that I extra love, and that is talk to Chris Tarr. I mean, and do This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, Chris Tarr, my co-host, welcome in. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. And I know it's a good side benefit to have me around. I am here in my secret lair in Maguanago, Wisconsin, where, just like you, beautiful weather today. I can't wait to get outside, maybe out on the back deck and enjoy it. I'm here in my secret lair here in Wisconsin.
Do other people in your family know where you are right now? Or just the dog?
Not if I'm lucky, because I'm trying to hide.
I've got right now there are 7 grandkids right up there. They're watching TV.
Oh, cool.
I said, kids, nice. No jumping around for an hour, okay? Because Mr. Tarr is going to be talking.
Let's play the quiet game.
Let's see how long we can hold our breath. My mom did that to us.
That's right.
Did your mom do that to you? How long can you hold your breath?
No, we had the quiet game. The longest person who stayed quiet, the longest wins.
Yeah. What do we win, Mom? Well, a sucker the next time we go through the bank drive-thru.
Right, exactly.
Something we were going to get anyway. Hey, Chris, our show is brought to you in part by Ray Topp over at Radio Guide magazine. I like Radio Guide because they make room for longer articles, in-depth articles, small market and non-traditional revenue. For example, an article by Roger Paskvin. And that's something that, hey, engineers ought to find out about. And in Radio Guide, you'll also see some things that we talk about here on our show, like from the folks at Angry Audio, this right here, this All Access Pass, otherwise known as a World Panel. But I also like Radio World because, well, sometimes they put my picture in the back. Thanks, Ray Topp. Well, thanks for nothing. That just takes up space. But you'll find great articles in Radio Guide. You can go to the website radio-guide.com, and you can sign up for the paper version. It comes out 6 times a year, every 2 months, and that's about how long it takes me to read everything in there when I can get to it all. So it's good magazine. Hey, our show is also brought to you by our friends at Nautel. I got to tease. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll let Chris do it. Chris, before we hear from Nautel on the Transmission Talk Tuesday, give us a little tease as to what we're going to be hearing about today. I posted something a little, you might call it titillating on Facebook.
Sure there's actually a lot of people waiting to hear the story behind the little teaser picture there. Today, we're just going to be, I've got a bunch of pictures, and, one of the questions I get a lot, and especially from you, actually, Kirk, is what have I been doing? I've been really busy. If you follow me on Facebook, you can see, I'm all over the place with my exploits. So I'm going to share some pictures of some of the things we've been working on, some of the things we found, and talk about, some of the work that my coworkers and I have been doing to really kind of move things forward. I inherited, now we're up to almost 50 signals, and you know, the my coworkers have done such a great job over the years that, you know, fortunately, you know, everything was in really good shape, and, you know, we're all now together taking it to the next level. So we'll go over just some pictures of things that I've come across in my travels and some of the stories behind it.
On our Facebook feed today, I promoted it by posting a picture that you sent me. It is of a BE 5 kilowatt FM transmitter being hauled somewhere on a forklift, and it's got a few blank holes in the front of the BE transmitter, and it says, "What's going on here? Is this BE FM transmitter being stolen, kidnapped, relocated, retired, replaced? Chris Tarr claims to have the story. Indeed, he claims responsibility for this situation. Was he driving the forklift? Does he know the perpetrators personally? Is it a tort tell-all? It's coming up this afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Chris Tarr promising to spill the beans and hopefully not spill the transmitter."
Well, and as a matter of fact, we will. That will be the first thing we talk about once we're done here with what you have to do next with Nautel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Nautel's coming. Hey, real quick, here's 40 seconds worth of video from Nautel from a previous Transmission Talk Tuesday.
The scope I use all the time for AMs specifically, more than I do anything else. Right. But the scope I'm finding myself using more and more in the digital realm, you know, tracking status IOs off of remote controls that are not functioning properly. You know, it's like so things that you can't get out of, like in an open collector system where it's like, oh, is it closed or I don't know, the transistor's holding it, you know. So I'm finding myself using a digital scope more and more to do more of the data logging than I am anything else.
Thanks. It was a great learning time. That's what folks say about the Nautel webinars, specifically the Transmission Talk Tuesday. And they're not really so much webinars, although that is the web location you go to sign up for it. They got a Transmission Talk Tuesday coming up this coming Tuesday. That's June the 14th. June the 14th. It's care and feeding of your AM array. And, you know, there's a lot of us who don't do enough of that. The, you know, AM stations still have to operate within their parameters, and we're going to have a lot of advice on the next Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable discussion from Nautel about the care and feeding of your AM array. So you want to sign up for that at nautel.com/webinars, nautel.com/webinars. There's a link in our show notes for that as well, and we look forward to seeing you there on Tuesday, June the 14th, just a few days from the taping of this show, recording of this show. And here we are taping. Chris, the tape is rolling, buddy. I think we're ready to jump into the story about this BE transmitter being hauled away or hauled somewhere on a forklift.
Yes, yeah, Suncast. Actually, we can put in the second picture in that first folder, which should be that particular transmitter on the forklift. We can get into that story. This is a radio station we have in... that one can come out. It's actually... I got them mixed up. Third folder, second picture. We'll get back to this one in a minute. It's in the Racine folder. And oh, okay. Well, then we'll come back to that then later. We'll start with this one, and we'll get to the forklift in a minute.
Well, yeah, we'll
so get to go back
and,
one.
And actually, Chris, you bring up a great point because I share files all the time on Google Drive. The company I work for, Telos Alliance, we use the whole Google Workspace. And what's a little frustrating is you have a view and you send somebody a link to that view, and their view may be different because they may have them ordered by date of composition or creation or alphabetically, sure, or the last time they were opened or the owner. And I wish there was a way. Maybe somebody could comment. I wish there was a way to send somebody, you know, a file listing or share a folder, and things would appear exactly the way that you intend them to appear.
Yeah, that's right. We could jump around. If we can go back to that first picture again, and I could tell the story behind that. Okay. Was there one before that with the two guys or no? Okay. Well, and then we'll start with this. This is a transmitter site I did earlier in the year. It's a translator. This is in DeForest, Wisconsin, and it's for a station we have in Portage. And if you notice, we've got the little box there. This was an interesting installation in that, you know, we're actually still doing some work on it, but the tower crew actually was really good. You can see where we put up the transmission line overhead. We were very lucky in that there was a concrete pad already there from an old tenant. So we were able to bolt our cabinet there onto the ground, and we were kind of worried about how we were going to get the line over. And it just happened that on the truck, the tower crew had a piece of strut. We were able to clamp that to the side of the cabinet and run the transmission line overhead into the cell tower. And you can see out the side there, there's the electrical going out to the electrical box. This one we had some issues with. We still do with, I think we have a bad connector. In fact, tomorrow morning, I'm going back to that site to do a little more work. But we do a lot with transmitters. We have many translators that we have all over the state. And, you know, one of the things we do is we really build these out. Inside of that translator is a brand new Gates AirFax 1. Also, we have data going there, and that's how we feed the audio to the transmitter, because it's this one is for an AM. And so we feed unprocessed audio over a codec to that transmitter, and then the transmitter has an OptiMod built into it. But we take these really seriously. On the top of that antenna is a three-bay, regular three-bay FM antenna. It looks like a Jampro penetrator. You know, 7/8-inch transmission line, all of it's new, everything there is new. It costs a little bit, but the performance you get out of it is so much better when you build it out and you buy new antenna, new line, new transmitters, that sort of thing. And we kind of treat them as if we were building a full power station. And, you know, we have, we have had really good results. And also with scouting out transmitter sites, the consulting engineer and I work very closely together, scouting out sites for our translators, and then I handle a lot of the contracts for them. But we've managed to get some really, really good sites for these translators around the area. And we have several of them that pretty much have the coverage of a Class A because of the location and the height.
Chris, I got a couple quick questions here.
Sure.
That site, and I realize I can't take this much time on every picture, but that brings up a couple questions.
Yeah.
So at first I was scratching my head thinking, well, where's the building? Where's the building? Oh, you've got it in a cabinet. You've got, because it's a translator.
Yes.
Airflows. So how powerful is the transmitter that's in that cabinet?
That's a 1,000-watt transmitter.
Okay. And you live in a pretty cold environment there. I'm in a much hotter, in my station in Mississippi, hot, really humid environment. What's in that cabinet? What's that cabinet got for any kind of environmental considerations?
In the winter, it's actually got a radiant kind of a heater pad on the side of the enclosure. Although the transmitter generates enough heat generally in that small area that in the winter, it doesn't get really warm, but it doesn't ever get below freezing. And then in the summer, there's several exhaust fans, and then the exhaust fan for the transmitter actually is inches away from the louvers of the back door of the cabinet. The hot air blows right out the back door.
And in your situation with the three bay antenna you mentioned and the 7/8 coax, is any of that pressurized or does it need to be?
No, that's all foam. Generally, it's the AV50, Andrew. So it's foam insulated. We generally, that's pretty much a standard we use on all our lines. We find that, you know, it's a good combination between, you know, line size and, you know, lower loss, but not so big that you're, you know, you have lease considerations and things like that based on antenna size because of structural and those sorts of things. So we find that to be a pretty good trade-off.
Okay. Cool. Is there any backup power at that site?
There is a generator there. Yes. And, you know, we try to source that whenever we can. If we, you know, generally I try to work out deals where we get on the house power, we just pay extra in the rent for power because we're not really using that much. So, that also helps us get on to, it also helps us get on to if they have generators and things like that, you know, we can tap into that and use that.
Okay.
Cool. So we'll go to the next picture now. These are two of my favorite guys. John Zeckerly is the gentleman on the left, and Eric Bernstad is the gentleman on the right. And that is a brand new Nautel transmitter that we just put in Fort Atkinson. That was the first day we turned it on. It's not actually running an HD in that one. It is now. John's a funny guy. We'll see some more. I think we'll see some more of John's work. Nicest guy you'll ever know. Really nice. but he is like this transmitter savant. I mean, the guy can fix anything, and he's one of my favorite coworkers because, you know, we'll have these just I have transmitters all over, different makes, models, you name it, and he can fix them all, and it's just amazing. He'll walk in, and after 10 minutes of just looking at it, he'll go, we got to do this. He's one of those guys, and he is just so smart with that stuff. I'm just so grateful that I've got him. But those guys helped me to commission that transmitter, and, you know, kind of our thing is whenever we do that, I try to get a picture of the guy standing next to it. So there they are. That's a WSJY and Fort Atkinson. Next to it is an HT20, which was the main transmitter. That's now the backup. And then the Nautel now is there, and it's running HD.
Nice.
So we'll go to the next picture. This is same market, Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. This is WFAWAM. And then also on the tower to the right there, you can see some FM bays on top for WKCH. I just like this picture. It's a really nice sight out in the country, near some farmland. And, you know, the bases we got, there's no trees around the bases or in the guy wire areas, but there are trees in the field. And, you know, we decided not to clear cut it. We just keep it trimmed. And, it's such a peaceful place. I love just hanging out there and, you know, sitting outside and enjoying the towers. That's actually a station's got a great signal. It's only, I think it's 500 watts, but it's on 940. So it's got, and in the, you know, Midwest soil like that, it gets out pretty far.
Nice.
So we'll go to the, go on to the next one here. Okay. So this is another example of a translator site that we built. This is one since then, this has changed. This was actually kind of the round one just to get it on the air. This is in Beloit, Wisconsin, and this is actually going to be rebroadcasting an HD channel of that WSJY site. But as you can see, you know, I in all of our sites, I put in, you know, professional racks, you know, try to put in professional gear. Originally we had the FX50 feeding that Armstrong power amplifier that now has a new FAX 1 kilowatt transmitter there. I like this picture just because the old Unity 2000.
Yeah, I noticed that right off. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the that's one of my floater processors. When I need processing somewhere in a pinch, I bring that over. But this is a great example of a site where you know, I negotiated a really decent lease. It's an old Nextel site, so it's got air conditioning. It's got, you know, it's got power filtering, all these sorts of things. And I got a great deal on the tower site. This is also, I believe, a 3-bay antenna as well. So, this site has really good coverage as well. And this site, most of my go ahead.
I just want to point out that Armstrong amplifier at the bottom of the rack there, I've got, that looks like the 500 watt model. Do you know if it is?
Yes, it is.
I've got one of those, have used it for years, you know, as a backup or a main. And that thing has just been so reliable. In fact, it's spent some time in American Samoa. We ended up replacing full time there. And it floats around our company, Delta Radio, and wherever we need it, it just sits there and runs. It's been very good.
And that's generally it's normal life. It's full time job usually is as an IPA for a backup Armstrong transmitter. And we didn't need the transmitter at the time. We put it in storage. So I grabbed that and am using that kind of as a floating transmitter as well. But again, it's showing that, you know, we've reused some of the equipment we have. It's why, you know, as we pick up these stations, I always consolidate and know what we have in stock. I mean, this was all put together with stuff we had. And when I wanted to get this on the air, I just grabbed out of the shop, the stuff that we had that, you know, we needed for this project and put it in. And by the way, this site and most of the translator sites you're going to see are all fed by IP radios, Ubiquiti links from our studio sites. So this is the same kind of thing. Yeah. So let's go to the next one. That's just a picture of the same site in Fort Atkinson. This is the WSJY site. This is a 650 foot tower. The main FM bays are at the very top. You can see why the translator in that building gets gear coverage because the 3-bay right below that is a translator.
Way up.
There. Yeah. And that translator has the coverage of a Class A. That's for that WFAW station that we took a picture of before. That's for their FM translator. And again, that just, you know, I've got a really good consulting engineer, and he and I work very closely together to find these ideal spots and ideal frequencies. And, you know, with the new rules with the FCC, with translators, you can change more than three up or three down translator frequencies if you can prove that you're going to send and create and receive less interference. So a lot of these translators we got as part of the AM revitalization or things like that, when we filed and everybody filed and, you know, you kind of got what you got. Well, you know, we waited to build these out a little bit, and we were able to, after a lot of these others were built, we could take a look at interference potential and things like that. And in some cases, change to a much better frequency and get better coverage. And that's what we did here. That originally, that's in close to in between Janesville and Madison, Wisconsin. And on the original frequency, there was another translator in Madison on the same frequency. So once the FCC rules changed, we were able to change that from 103.3 to 101.1 and got a much better signal, much less interference. And then I like to point out the six bay antenna with the broken element there.
Yes, I saw that.
That is a backup antenna, and it actually still works. It works just fine. I load the FM transmitters into it as a backup. That's going to go away. I've actually got a Class A that we're dropping in. We're moving from another location to here, and that's going to go up on that tower as well. So that's that. That's just a nice tower that we have down at Fort Atkinson. So we're going to go to the next picture. Okay, this is La Crosse, and you can see those little crispy critters there. Ooh. The story behind that was, this is WQCC in La Crosse, and we had a failure there, and John Zuckerly went up there, as he usually does, as my transmitter coworker. He went up there and he's like, yeah, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. So I went up there with my TDR, and it showed a problem right at the antenna input. And I measured the line, and it showed a fault right there. And I, you know, I'm sitting there going, I don't see anything. I pulled it apart. Well, then we took a flashlight and shined it in there, and just past where the bullet connects was that. We actually sawed open the outer jacket of the coax, and it was all burned up in there. Basically, we had a bad connector from the transmission line coming out of the transmitter into the line going to the tower. And the connector over time heated up and burned out the connector and the inner conductor of the bottom end of the transmission line. So that was what we cut out. Those nice crispy critters there, and we replaced the connector, and everything was happy again. Wow. So we're on to the next one.
We're going to take a quick break. And you did use a term there that I think is probably worth explaining, because it's kind of inside baseball. You said TDR. Tell us, what is a TDR? Yeah.
Sure. A TDR is a time domain reflectometer, and they're really great devices. And I'm probably not saying this exactly correct, but basically it sends a signal up the line and measures reflection, measures the time it takes to get from where the device is to the load. And so if for some reason there's something in between there that changes the timing of the signal going up and back on the line, it shows as a fault. So it's a great device for finding problems in the line, and not only that, by identifying where they are. So for example, in this situation, I could see immediately that, you know, within a couple of feet of where the cable started, there it showed a fault all the way up to the top. So in that case, you know, we could tell that the fault was right at the bottom of the line. But it's one of those really handy devices to have if you're troubleshooting antennas, because, you know, with the right device, not only can you sweep the line to make sure the line's okay, but you can also check the load and, you know, make sure that the load is resonant at frequency. And if it's not, you can figure out where it is and that sort of thing. So it's something that everybody should have in their toolbox for sure.
What, you know, when I was doing engineering, well, I mean, years ago, when I kind of started in this, somebody did have a TDR, was at a 100 kilowatt FM site. And I recall that it was a really expensive device. Now, remember, this was back in the mid 1980s. What does a TDR cost these days?
Oh, they're great. And especially, you know, they've started to be used in ham radio. I have one that I bought for, I believe, $300. And now it's not perfect, but it's great for just these quick, you know, I wouldn't use it for laboratory grade testing or anything, but it certainly does enough to get you to where you need to be. And it's actually made by a ham. I'll have to look it up. It's Rig Experts, I think, is the company that makes them.
Sure.
Yeah. And they basically do ham radio equipment, but they've got them for like $300. And so, I mean, it's a no brainer to pick one of those up and have them in the truck.
I want to say the one we used in the mid-80s was, and I didn't get to touch it. It wasn't up to me to touch it. It was like $30,000, not $300.
I've got a really expensive one made by Anritsu, but really I don't even bring it around much anymore because this one is much smaller and way easier to deal with.
Good deal. Yeah, I think of TDR as, you know, we think of weather radar, sends out a beam, see what comes back. I think of TDR as like radar for a closed coaxial environment, and you send a pulse out, and then anything that's an anomaly to, I mean, anytime there's an impedance change, and that can be caused just by a small thing, even the center conductor being pushed slightly aside, or a poor connector, or almost any connector, whether it's poor or not, there's a little bit of a bump there in impedance, and that will reflect back to the TDR. The TDR knows how long it took to, you know, get back, and therefore knows how long along the line that the problem is. So it's like radar for a coax.
Adequate, exactly. Maybe. Yeah. No, it uses the known velocity of the line for its timing. So it knows how long it should take for that pulse to go there and back. If it comes back sooner, it knows that in that particular spot, there's a problem.
Yep. Good analogy. Good one. All right. Hey, this week in Radio Tech, this episode is our 597th or something like that. Chris Tarr is our guest and co-host. Yes, he's getting paid double today. Shouldn't have said that. he's here talking about his FM projects. Well, here's something to help you with your studio projects. This is from Angry Audio, and this is what's known as a world panel. Now, I built a lot of studios that didn't have world panels, and then, of course, every time somebody needed something, I had a hard time fulfilling their need, or I had to be there and wire something up. And by needing something, I mean needing some audio out of my console for their purposes, like a TV crew comes by, somebody's doing a documentary. Yeah, I know, even on my little stations. Or somebody just needs a feed from the console or wants to feed something into the console that is unusual or unexpected. Well, that's what a world panel is for. And this is the best one out there. This is from the folks at Angry Audio. It's got the Studio Hub name brand on it. And what makes this world panel so good, it does all these different kinds of audio. It does AES, EBU, and analog, balanced and unbalanced, in and out. And then here's your connectors on the back to hook up to your devices, but it's powered. It's not a passive device. It's an active device. And that means that these are fully buffered, the inputs and outputs. And if somebody plugs in something that's like got something stupid wrong with it, it won't blow up your gear. Yes, it might hurt the world panel, but it won't hurt your broadcasting infrastructure. And that's what I want to protect. You know, when somebody comes in and says, hey, can I plug my VCR into your stuff? Well, okay. And you're protected. It's also got a couple of plugs there way on the far right of the thing, or far left in this picture of the back. And those are pass-throughs. There's a USB pass-through and an Ethernet pass-through. And so you can hook those up as well to give people access to USB or Ethernet right there in your studio. The World Panel from Studio Hub and Angry Audio. Check this thing out. They call it their All Access Pass. I like that. That's and if you go to that webpage, there's a little video there from Marcus O'Rourke, a good friend of Twert. In fact, he's going to be a guest again sometime. And Marcus talking about the World Panel that he's put into his studios. Our show this week in Radio Tech also brought to you by our friends at Max Connect Wireless. Here's someone to tell you about it.
I'm Gary Morrow, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
Hey, I've got a similar one right here. This is the Cradlepoint 4G LTE modem, but it's not the modem that makes the difference. It's the SIM cards that go inside. Max Connect Wireless, you are connecting to their APNs. I'm not sure what that stands for. Maybe Chris Starr knows. But basically, you're on the cellular network, on their data network, and you get prioritized data, just as Gary Morrill was talking about. Your packets are more important than most of the Toms, Dicks, and Harrys that are out there. And so you get priority data. Only first responders have a higher priority than you do. And you get a fixed IP address. So you can remotely get into your stuff if it's, say, at a transmitter site or something like that. They have SIM cards for the major carriers like AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon. So check them out. Prioritized high-speed LTE internet service designed for broadcast from Max Connect Wireless. Thanks a lot to Max Connect. Thanks also to AngryAudio.com. for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is here, and Chris has been pretty busy. He's aggregated a whole bunch of pictures for us. And Chris, let's just jump right back into it without further ado.
All right. So this is a brand new studio we put on the air in La Crosse. We had a building that we inherited when we bought some stations, going up on 2 years now almost. They had just gotten out of bankruptcy. We bought them. They had an old building with some old gear in it. And we decided to move to a new location. And, you know, we've been talking about this before and kind of over time where, we don't really need all of these studios for all of these stations because we don't really do much. We're not live 24/7 anymore. So in this situation, we said, well, let's build a nice studio for all of our stations that any of them can use. Well, audio over IP obviously fits the bill for that. Because you can route audio in and out. I can route it to any station. So we have a couple of smaller studios that we can put on the air. We can use for voice tracking. But this is what we refer to as our showcase studio. And so when we have guests in or we do live talk shows or anything like that, where we bring people in, we do the programming from this studio. And it's not done yet. This was actually just after I got the studio built. We have some things that we're going to put on the walls and some more things. What's great is that sliding glass door there. When you open up the blinds, it goes out onto a little deck that oversees the Mississippi River. So it's got a really nice view there. But this was fantastic. This just worked out really well. We did measurements on the cabinet there so we could slide that underneath. That actually slides right out so we can access the back of the gear. And the countertop was actually something that the previous tenant had left, and I had the landlord of the building is also a builder and a carpenter. He built the extension to bring it up to a standing level. So it was actually down just a regular desk, and we had him jack it up to the standing level and high enough where that Middle Atlantic rack slid right under and literally fits right under. It looks like it's custom made. And it is kind of, but anyway, that's our new studio there in La Crosse. Using Axia gear. So we'll go on to the next picture now. Yeah, it's really nice. That is the roof of that building and the IP radios. And, you know, we've talked several times about how, I'm moving away from 950 megahertz STLs and moving to IP radios. And so those are 2-1 points to each of our transmitter sites, one on the Minnesota side and one on the Wisconsin side of the Mississippi. And one second here. Let me stop that thing from beeping. The one hop is actually something like 20 miles away, and I get over 100 meg throughput on it. So it works really, really well. And then I use an IP codec to get audio back and forth. So that's what that is. That's on the roof of the building. It was a really easy install. And obviously, it's much easier than trying to do an STL dish up there or several. Just a 5-foot pole on a regular antenna mount. So that's that. Next one. This is WKBH-FM. This is in Brownsville, Minnesota, on the other side of the Mississippi. Site's a little bit different now. This is when we first took it over and bought it from the company that had it previous to us. We've changed some things since then, but basically there were two FMs here, and we sold one and kept the other. And originally, they were both HD. The transmitter on the left was for one station. The transmitter on the right was for the station we kept. And then we sold that first station to another group. But what we did is we kept all of the hardware, and we installed for them. Right now it's in Linux, but we eventually put in a Nautel, and that's what they bought. We kept the other transmitter for a backup transmitter and for the extra HD gear. So right now that transmitter on their left now serves as an auxiliary transmitter for our station across the river and a backup for this one. So to kind of go a little bit in depth, we have a situation where our two main FMs, one's in the on the Wisconsin side of the river and one's on the Minnesota side, and they're on different grids. Neither site has a generator. We'll at some point fix that. So what I did was I got licensed each station to the other's site. So this is 102.7, 106.3 is on the other side of the river. Well, I now have a 106.3 aux license for this site and a 102.7 aux for the other side. We've actually used it a couple of times. So what's great about it, though, is it's frequency agile, so I can also make that a backup for 102.7. And that is actually what's kind of clever about this is the audio to that transmitter is fed from an Axia node back at the studio with a switcher, with the Livewire delegation switcher. So I can send any station's audio I want to that transmitter by clicking a button. It just changes the feed out of Axia to the STL. So nice. That was one of the clever little things we did, and it's already saved our bacon. It's just connected to a small antenna, you know, 3/4 of the way up on the tower. We run it about 2 kilowatts and TPO on that one, and it covers the market just fine. And it gave us a really nice backup, nice auxiliary site. So that's that one. Go to the next picture. And I think I've shown these before, but a little bit of backstory here. These are stations that we bought from a company that had just gotten out of bankruptcy. So there are some things that we needed to clean up. And as I mentioned, fortunately, I have really good coworkers who just do great things. And this was just one of the sites we inherited. And if you'll see right where that dish is, obviously there's all this brush and overgrowth. And we own property that goes way back into that lot. And one of the problems we had, unfortunately, was homeless people and drug addicts going back there to shoot up. And the other thing is that's an AM site. So really the brush and everything isn't very good at it. So this was the before picture. So we're going to go to the next shot here. That is the after picture. And you can see where we just cleared it all out. And basically that's a fork in the river down at the end. It kind of goes to a peninsula and the river goes on both sides. So we cleared out all the way down to the river. And obviously that eliminated the problems that we had. There was actually a homeless camp back there that we had found that had, tents and blankets and things like that. So we took care of that issue. We're going to the next picture. This is the rack that we're working on in the basement of the building in La Crosse. This was actually filled with old gear that didn't work or wasn't plugged in even. So we started taking everything out, and you'll notice kind of the beginnings of the Axia network there. So that's just a picture of some of the things we've put in and some of the things that we've changed in the rack. We're actually consolidating all of that down to, I think, probably 2 racks now. And obviously saved on the power bill by unplugging all the gear that we're no longer using. So that's one of the things that we're working on as we pick these markets up is, going through racks. So go to the next one. That was filled with wire. That was all of the punch blocks and barrier strips and everything that fed the audio from the studios to the transmitters and, all the associated gear. That was all replaced with audio over IP. You can just imagine if you look at all those terminal strips and punch blocks and everything else, you can just imagine the amount of wiring that was there. It was crazy. So let's go to the next picture. Yeah. And labor. That is just a pile of some of the wires we took off that wall. And just imagine trying to troubleshoot that. If something we had a channel that was out of phase, and to try to track down where that was, it was next to impossible trying to figure out where that issue was. So it was a really nice day when we yanked all of that out. it's very cathartic to go through and be pulling all that stuff off the wall and taking it out of the punch blocks. So we'll go to the next picture. Mm-hmm. That is the new AM transmitter we put in La Crosse. You can see on the left there is an old RCA BTA1R1. That actually went to a ham. We put something online and we just need to get rid of it. It was just taking up space. So we said, hey, you know, if you're ham, you want this, come get it. And somebody did. So we, you know, now that space is nice and open. So we have plenty of space in there and things are nice. Next to it is an MW1 on the right side. That is still in use as our backup. But the J1000 is fantastic. It's been very happy and has been running with no problems since we put it in. So that was a really major improvement. I mean, the MW1, and again, a lot of these things that we're seeing here in lacrosse were things that just didn't have any maintenance or very little maintenance. They didn't really have an engineer. So, you know, there was a lot of work we had to do right away to kind of get things back into shape. You know, that MW1 wasn't running at full power. You couldn't fully modulate it. The STL had bad caps in it. So we fixed all of that. And this station is just loud and proud at this point. So we're very happy with those results.
Hey, so Chris, next picture. I've seen a couple of the sign systems panels there. Are you still using sign systems remote controls at some places, the dial-up things, or are you swapping those out here and there? I know you're big on SNMP.
Yeah, we're swapping those out one by one. We now have two or three of our markets that are on Burke. Basically what I've done is I have Fort Atkinson is kind of our corporate hub for technology. I've got fiber going in there. I've got generators all over. And that is where our master Burke system is. And then everything else is connected via SNMP through remote panels at all of our sites. So we're slowly converting all of our sites from sign systems to the Burke. And what's great about the Burke is I just have the one system that can dial out for all of the stations and do all the logging and everything. So, and that is that's at a hardened site that has multiple IP paths and things like that.
You know, interestingly, my stations in Mississippi are in similar straits. We're moving away finally from some SIM systems, although they've been extraordinarily reliable and I'm surprised they're still working this long. I mean, it seems like parts in them just don't seem to wear out too much unless they get a strong lightning hit. Hey, Chris, we need to take a quick break. Is that all right? Or do you have something you want to finish
Absolutely.
Up? Okay.
Well, right, we're gonna hear just the nice thing. Here, let me just, the last thought about the Burke is one of the reasons we moved to that is when you have 20 some, you know, main sites that have these remote controls, to try to keep track of the phone numbers and the commands and all of these different things, it's just crazy. So this consolidates it. I have one web page. You log in, it shows all the sites on a web page. You know, you dial one number, one security code. You know, it just makes it a whole lot easier to manage that.
Do you normally access it by voice phone or remote access to a computer?
No. I usually use the web page, use remote access, but it's nice, you know, because obviously when there's a failure, it'll send an email, but if it's in the middle of the night, I'll never see it. So it'll dial out and call us if there's a problem.
Gotcha. Okay. Good deal. Hey, Chris Tarr is our guest and he's been going over a lot of transmitter sites that he's been doing work at, consolidating a lot of those into one show here. We got more from Chris coming up, including the story about that BE transmitter that's coming up. I promise you. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store, where you can get the Inovonics products. And here's a couple of new modulation monitors to talk about.
Hi, this is Gary Lerman. I'm Sales and Marketing Manager from Inovonics. I'm joined here by our President and CEO, Ben Barber. And we're here to tell you about two new products that we're very excited about. They're HD modulation monitors, the model 551 and 552. And Ben's going to take us through some of the features. Ben, what can you tell us about these?
The 551 has the big display, 7-inch touchscreen display. You can look at different parameters instantly by walking up to it and touching it, getting information that you need. It also has the LED displays for FM total modulation, left, right, FM, HD 1, 2, 3, and 4. The other thing that the 551 has is that it has full-time audio outputs on studio hub connectors on the back, both analog as well as AES digital. So you've got FM, HD 1 through 4 there full-time. The 552 doesn't have the display, doesn't have the metering, and doesn't have the full-time audio outputs, but the web interfaces are identical for remote viewing and monitoring.
Great. Thanks very much, Ben. These products are going to be available in January 2022. Contact us at InnovonicsBroadcast.com for more information. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Innovonics, and Broadcaster General Store, which is where you can get a great price on Innovonics. They have sharp pencils over there, and they have a really great computer system that they've been working on, literally building it for years to serve you, the broadcast industry customers. They can get you a great price, and second of all, they're usually able to tell you the day of delivery and give you choices on delivery method. So bgs.cc is the website for Broadcasters General Store, bgs.cc, or you can call them at, because they're great on the phone. In fact, I just talked to Broadcast General Store today at 352-622-7700. 352-622-7700. If you haven't dealt with BGS yet, give them a try. You're going to like dealing with them. Good folks there. All right. I'm talking to Chris Tarr. Let's jump right back into Chris's story and photos, and we're going to eventually get to that mystery transmitter on the forklift.
Let me get to this. This was at that same site with the homeless camp. As we were clearing out all the brush, that's some of the paraphernalia that we found, and turned that over to the police, because actually it was interesting. We had one of the patrol officers stop by, and just out of the blue, to thank us for clearing that out, because that had been such a big problem for them. But that is some of the things we found as we cleared out that site. I wanted to go back really quick to Innovonics that you mentioned there. One of the other things that I've done recently is we've put in each of our markets an Innovonics site streamer. And that way I can monitor, or anybody, we have my coworkers like to do it too. I can monitor the off-air signal of any of our stations in any of our markets just from my VPN. I can log in and monitor over the air the stations. So that's been very helpful too. All right, so let's go to the next picture. Let's see what we got here. That's again showing the J1000 in service, running happily at 1,000 watts, 1 kilowatt. All right, I'll go to the next one. This is another translator rack. This too has changed up a little bit. You can see the Unity there too before I replaced it. This is in Hoka, Minnesota. And what we have there is we've got two translators that are fed by HD subchannels of our station that was in that Minnesota building. So basically, again, this is a rack. We've since did even more cleaning. Eric and I cleaned up much, much more on that. So it's just basically a really nice, neat little rack with two FMs there. And you can see the Zip One and a server. And I've got, I think we've got another picture here, the next one. If you want to put that up. There you go. You can see there, that's actually a power distribution unit, and I can remotely reboot anything in that rack. And that just shows me the wattage and the power that it's taking, but I can go in and reboot anything. So if there's an issue somewhere, and a piece of equipment goes stupid, I can just log in and restart the equipment, or even the entire rack if I need to.
Hey, that's pretty cool. I've got one of those on Mount Kahili in Hawaii, on the island of Kauai, and it's the one reliable IT thing that I have there. As long as my IP radio works and my little router up there works, there's a lot of RF. I can reboot things. Yours has those meters on it that shows power draw on each outlet, right?
Correct. Yeah, so I can see if something's drawing too much power, or if something's completely dead. I can see, okay, it's plugged in and, it's the device. I don't need to reboot it because it's dead. It's not drawing any power. So the device has failed.
I'd love to know which model that one is. It'd be nice to have confirmation of, what's on and off.
I'll get you I don't, off the top of my head, I don't remember the model, but I can certainly find out for you and let you know. And then up there is a tuner that we use to monitor the stations in La Crosse. We'll go on to the next picture here. Okay. This, now we're into the deal with the broadcast electronics transmitter. This is Racine, Wisconsin. And one of the things we like to do, obviously, like a lot of stations do, we shop around, and when we find a good deal, we try to jump on it right away. Bob Gorjantz, who's another one of my coworkers, loves digging around on these websites looking for deals, and he found this transmitter. And the story of this is, this was in Reno, Nevada. It's a beautiful, well-maintained transmitter. Jeff Walton looked up from Nautel, looked up the service history. It is immaculate. The problem with these transmitters is they're not frequency agile. They can be retuned, but it costs a lot of money. It so happened that we found this one. It was on our frequency. And because of it, they were having a hard time selling it. They had been sitting for a long time. We bought this for, I think, $5,000 or something. For a solid state Nautel transmitter. And it's been running now, you know, well over a year without even a hiccup. So that's in that transmitter site now. So let's go to the next picture. And there it is, the picture that started this all today. So this transmitter was where the Nautel is now. It works. It's a FM5B. And actually, this is one we actually got at an auction. It was, I think, the state auction, and they got it for like $30 or something. And like I've mentioned, I have, especially John Zeckerle, I have these coworkers that are just amazing with transmitters. And in fact, John kind of posted on the Facebook page there that he knows that transmitter and knows where it is and everything else. He's spent a lot of time tweaking on it for me. And it's a great transmitter, very reliable. But obviously we're trying to, wherever possible, retire our tube transmitters. So this one actually we're keeping. We pulled it out, wrapped it up, put it on the truck, and that went to another one of our sites to retire as an auxiliary transmitter, as backup transmitter. So, you know, again, it works and it's fine. We just, you know, fortunately we have John who, you know, can make these transmitters sing. So we really don't get rid of them. You know, we usually try to, we repurpose them. My coworkers that are responsible for each of the sites, they take really good care of the equipment. So we really have no problems. And I, you know, I've got the exciter and the IPA for it. So those will go back in. So that's the story there. We didn't junk it. We didn't throw it out. The transmitter runs wonderfully, it's been well taken care of. So it gets to live on now as a backup transmitter, and it will be happy doing that.
Well, good. There were some comments on Facebook. People worried that it, you know, maybe you were throwing it away.
I should, or, you know, and I actually, a true story, when I first took over with this position, I kind of was on the same thing. It's like, oh, look at these old transmitters and their pain. But it's just amazing how well John and Bob and the guys took care of these transmitters. You know, I got to learn that these things are great. I mean, we've really have very few problems with transmitters. So they've been very well taken care of. So, you know, a transmitter like this, I try to hang on to and give it some more life. So we'll go on to the next picture. I think is just the picture of the Nautel in its new home. That's the site in Racine. So that's where the BE was sitting. So we'll go to the next one. I think we're at Reedsburg now. Yes. These are the last of the pictures. So we're getting to the end. This is a picture of a long wire antenna. You can see the orange flags there. This is a site earlier this year where the tower fell. We had a storm, ice storm, and the tower fell over. So again, we got the team together and put up a long wire antenna and got the STA license for it right away. So we're good to go. But basically we're taking a picture. We're at the transmitter site, at the transmitter building, and we're looking out, and that line goes all the way out to where those satellite dishes are. And the transmitter's on the air, a couple hundred watts. It's happy. So that's just a horizontal long wire antenna. So we'll go to the next site or next picture. There's another picture. Oh, that's it. Okay. That's it. I thought I had one more in there. I thought I had one more of John working on the transmitter there too, but that was an interesting story with the tower falling. And strangely enough, it's the second time that's happened for a site that I've dealt with. Not you know, not my employer, but I had another site that I was doing contract work for several years ago have an AM tower fall, and I had to do a long wire antenna there too. So those are just some of the pictures of my exploits. There's a whole lot more. I had a hard time picking just those to talk about. But it's been an exciting couple of years. We're doing a lot of growth still. But I'm very fortunate that we have the team that we do, because we each have kind of our own special talents. And it impresses me how much we're able to get done with as many stations as we have, because it could easily, it can get overwhelming. I mean, you know, when I had six stations, I thought that was a lot. You know, now, you know, with upwards of 50 signals to worry about, there's a lot going on. So I kind of lean on my coworkers to really kind of carry us, and they never fail to come through. So I'm very lucky that way. But some of the other things I do is every week, Cavell, Mertz, and Davis, they have a actually, it's just Cavell and Mertz now. They do their facility report. So basically, I give them the call signs of all of our facilities. And then once a week, I get on Saturday morning, I get a report of anything that's filed that may affect any of the stations. So I can kind of keep track of, is there something going on in the air that I need to know about? Or some technical changes somewhere that I need to know about. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still building. You know, the hardest part right now is just getting stuff. I've got two more signals that I've got to get on. And, you know, there's a 2-month wait now, at least, for transmission line. So, you know, I've got all the antennas. I don't have any transmission line. So we're kind of waiting on that as well. But, you know, we've really made some big leaps. You know, we've talked about the Burke. We've talked about those tuners, the IP radios. I've now put all of the sites on one VPN network, so they're all connected. And we're looking at that yesterday. We have a production person who works in La Crosse, and he just has links on his desktop to the audio servers in all the other markets, and they're just like local machines to him. And it used to be we were using Dropbox, and you know, each site had a kind of a prosumer or consumer router there. So now we have proper firewalls and proper VPN tunnels, not only to the sites, but also, or to the buildings, but also to the transmitter sites. So even all of our transmitter sites have internal IPs and they can all talk to each other, which is how the Burke system works. You know, all of the Burke stuff is on an internal network. So it's all protected, and the SNMP works just great over that. I very rarely have an issue. And it just requires some smart planning. You know, for example, we decided that La Crosse and Fort were kind of going to be our hubs because they're geographically diverse. Fort Atkinson's down in the southern part of the state, and La Crosse is kind of up in the northwestern. So we're building out those facilities to really be hardened. Multiple internet connections, multiple power sources, those sorts of things. And that's where we hold our corporate servers and those sorts of things. And then, you know, everybody else kind of connects to those. And those are all things that I brought to the table coming in. You know, everything was working fine, and the way they did it, there's really nothing wrong with it. It just was real efficient. So, you know, when I brought these things to the table and showed them how it all worked and put it all together, it really, you know, helped us become a lot more efficient. And I think it was something that needed to happen. I think that was the one kind of driving force why the owner of the company created the position and brought me in. Was these guys do a great job. And I certainly don't want to give the impression that they were struggling, or, you know, that there was something was broken and needed to be fixed. I mean, these guys are fantastic, but it's these, you know, kind of these upgrades that we're doing that, you know, I kind of stay on the cutting edge of this stuff, and they got to the size where that needed to happen. You know, it was fine when they were smaller to kind of have each thing as its own island and, you know, its own set of passwords and routers and, you know, right, kind of treating each place individually. But, you know, we really needed to come together and look at it as one big group and, you know, really start to, you know, all of our Wi-Fi passwords even were different in each of our buildings. Yeah. Now it's all the same. So you can walk into one building or another and your Wi-Fi works. So, yes, you know, it's even things as simple as that. So that's really, you know, what I've been working on. Well, I fortunately have some of these other guys to do, you know, a lot of the hardcore transmitter work. I can kind of focus on this stuff. And, you know, fortunately, again, you know, I inherited sites that we had already owned that were really clean and well, you know, well built and in good shape. It's these ones that we bought since then that had some issues that we've had to fix. So it's been a fun journey. It's been, you know, it's hard to describe. It's a different world from where I was at. You know, when I was with Intercom, now Odyssey, you know, I could call people higher than me. You know, I never really made decisions. It was like, well, I want to do this, and I'd have to float it up. But I'm the guy in charge. And I talk to the owner of the group, or as he likes to say, he hates it when I say my boss, because he's, you know, we're not, I'm your coworker. we talk almost on a daily basis. And, you know, even now today, you know, I was looking at getting some equipment and it's literally a phone call or a text message. And I get an immediate yes or no, or, you know, let's work on this, or let's see if we can get a better deal. Or, you know, I talk directly to the decision maker and we make those decisions immediately and we move. What's really great is every once in a while, like that transmitter where that Nautel transmitter that comes up and, you know, there's not even a discussion. I'll go, hey, you know, this transmitter, $5,000, it's amazing. He'd be like, get it. Don't even think about it. We'll figure it out. So it's just so great to, and you know, I mean, you deal with that same thing with your stations where, you know, it's just, there's no friction there. You know, I need something done. And even with like VPNs and the Burk system, I mean, that was that's an expense. And we sure could have stuck with the sign systems. But I explained to him what this brings to the table and how it works. And he said, well, it sounds to me like it's going to make your job easier. And, you know, all of our other engineers, is going to make everybody's lives simpler. I said, yeah, it sure will. He said, well, then it's money well spent. Let's go ahead and do it. So that's been refreshing, but it has been, again, it's been a learning experience because I had to be a manager and I have to, you know, play with others. And, you know, I've really learned to appreciate the people that I work with because quite honestly, they make me look good. I mean, I'm not that good, but they really, you know, they go out of their way to make me look good.
Chris, one thing I'd be interested in knowing, and we're running out of time now, maybe it'll be your tip of the week. Maybe it's a cause for another show down the road. And that is that I noticed that your different transmitter sites, you've shown us pictures of some things are consistent and similar site to site. Other things like, well, it doesn't matter or it's too expensive or there's no reason to change other, you know, other than to have them all the same. Right. And that's that in itself may not be a great reason, but I'd love to know from you, again, either tip of the week or maybe a whole show or part of a show, you know, how you make these decisions, what needs to be consistent site to site and even in studios and what, okay, doesn't matter. Look, I can work on an RVR product here and I can work on an Elanos product there and I can work on an Autel product there. So that's going to be something I'd like to know from you. We got to take a quick one more break though and hear from our friends at Broadcast Bionics about the Bionic Studio. Check this out.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio brings high quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI. And incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Really awesome stuff. I mean, all the things that make your studio and your production so much better from bionic.radio or bionics.co.uk. Broadcast Bionics, our friends and some extraordinarily clever people. Thanks a lot for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And that means that Bionic, Broadcast Bionics helps make this show possible. All right, Chris. tip of the week. You have something for us?
Yeah, we can quick talk about what you're talking about with consistency between sites. It's pretty easy. You know, my motto with this, or my standard with this is, we need to make the sites and locations easy to use so that if you were to walk into one, it's kind of the old bell system theory. You know, if you walk into one of our sites, it's this, you know, you walk into any of our sites. So, you know, door codes are the same, passwords are the same, that sort of thing. Now the transmitters themselves aren't, and that's okay. You know, I mean, transmitters are transmitters, and, you know, we have some similar ones, and it's not real feasible to replace all of those. I mean, we do have things we like. We're a big fan of the FX50 exciters, so we have those across our line. If we have something that we find that we really like, we'll use that. We kind of mostly use Omnia processors, but, you know, again, all of, you know, now especially our IP address schemes are the same from building to building. Our passwords are the same. Our codes are the same. Even down to, you know, again, we have keys, you know, keyed locks to get into the doors, and those codes are all the same. So, you know, it's one of those, I like to say, when I get up in the middle of the night, my brain's foggy, you know, what are the questions that I'm most likely to get asked? And, you know, can I do that off the top of my head? Because it's the same at all of our sites. So I'll know, yeah, somebody calls in the middle of the night and says, what's the code for this? I know that it's the same for everything. So I have it memorized. So those are the kinds of things that I really want to standardize on. And we've gotten pretty far along with that. Transmitters, you know, it's like, whatever. We've standardized on Axia for audio over IP. That's what we're comfortable with, and that's what we've really made work well. So all of our sites now, in some form or another, have Axia audio over IP equipment. So those sorts of things we like to standardize on. But after that, fortunately, like I said, I've got coworkers who can fix any of that stuff. So that doesn't really matter.
Well, good. Excellent tip. It's good to know how you decide, okay, what's got to get changed and what can stay the same until our next, you know, buying round, or until this, you know, product that maybe is not my favorite, but it's fine, is going to get replaced. Chris, if I could, I'll just give a little example of something that happened to me this week. And it was, we have a cluster of radio stations in Greenville, Mississippi. One of them is kind of an old school R&B format. And it's the call letters are WZYQ. The station's actually, that one's KZYQ. KZYQ. That station's actually licensed to Eudora, Arkansas. So our STL 950 shot goes some number of miles across the Mississippi River and over into the transmitter site in Arkansas. Well, we had a power failure at the studio, Chris. And when the power came back on, and of course, it was beyond the length of time that the batteries run on the UPS. So everything came back up. Okay. Everything came back up except for one automation system. It was the automation system for KZYQ. Turned out to be a bad cable on a SATA hard drive. That's a different story. Bottom line was the automation didn't come up. All right, what are we going to do? Well, it turns out that we run exactly the same format in a different town. We even dual ID both of them. So that it really is the exact same format. Now, eventually we're going to split them off with different commercials and not even different imaging, but, you know, different call sign, top of the hour. But for now, they're identical. They just run on two different automation systems. They're usually within a minute of each other in terms of execution or closer than that. And so I thought, well, what am I going to do? Okay. Well, yeah, I've got this one in Cleveland, Mississippi running. You know what? Why don't I, whenever I buy my stream encoding software from the Telos Alliance, I always buy an extra one. I buy an extra license, and I use that as a test stream. So you go to my, you know, IP address / secret port number / test, and you can choose what's going to be on the test stream. So I put the WZYQ automation on the test stream, with extremely minimal processing. And so now I have a private stream, not going through a CDN. It's just private, and I know where to get it. And then I went back over to Greenville to a computer there that I use for a lot of things. And I thought, ooh, you know what? I've never installed VLC on this computer. So I installed VLC, you know, in a couple of minutes. And because I like it, because it's, you know, it's pretty reliable for streaming something. And put in the IP address and the port number and the mount point of what is now going to be WZYQ. Anyway, I got that audio, and because we're audio over IP, because we're Axia, I could easily send that audio that recovered. We got the stream. I made it a high bit rate, AAC. We got that stream, and I send it out onto my network in Greenville, made it available on the network. Then I went over to my X node that actually takes all of each of our stations individually, turns them into analog to run through the relay for EAS for all of our stations, and then back in. So yeah, right there is where I chose to put that audio, right? The audio coming from Cleveland, Mississippi, similar radio station. And bam, we were back on the air. Because you know, everything else was intact. It was just that automation system. So, hey, go ahead.
Sorry, just really quickly, because I do something along that same line. I talked about the hardened sites in to the north and the south. One of the things we're working on now is putting in backup playout machines for all of our stations in those sites. And because I use IPSTLs and because we use Axia, I can send any station to any other station. Yep. Through streaming. And in fact, we've done that. I have a location where the satellite dish failed. So I sent the audio from one location to another over the IP stream through codecs and through Axia. So yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things about audio over IP is it's so flexible. You know, if you can just come up with audio somewhere, you can make it work. In fact, I had a transmitter site that I used, same kind of thing where the STL was basically, I set up an Icecast server at the studio and then opened up a web browser in Chrome at the transmitter site, played the stream, fed the transmitter with it.
And if your audio processing is at the transmitter site, then that works. And in this particular case, our internet to that transmitter site in Arkansas is really poor. And we send composite there by 950. So there's no processor at that site. So that's why I had to do it back at the studio where we have great internet on fiber. And the audio processing is there anyway. So your mileage may vary. You may have to have different ways. I have done it. In fact, I've got a site, little crossroads called Heads, Mississippi, where if I need to, if I lose my big IP radio that carries three radio stations, I can pick up streams of each of those stations and feed them to the processors that are at the transmitter site. It would take me a few minutes to do it, but I've done it before a few times and it does work. So anyway, hey, it's time to wrap up, Chris. Thank you so much for your storytelling and educating us on how what you're doing and how you're getting it done.
You are certainly welcome. I had a good time doing it.
Me too. All right, folks, thanks for joining us on This Week in Radio Tech. We'll be back next week with another edition. Thanks to Suncast for producing this episode of This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. Please patronize our sponsors. Really helpful, okay? And we'll see you next week right here on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.